Today, I would like to introduce Kevin Lynn. Kevin Lynn works for the Department of Energy as part of the SunShot Initiative, a national initiative to enable the widespread adoption of solar energy. There, he is the program manager of the Systems Integration Team, supporting research in grid integration, PV system performance and reliability, and balance of system hardware. He has developed funding opportunities in grid integration, balance of system hardware, plug-and-play technologies, and solar forecasting. Now I will go ahead and pass it on to Kevin. Kevin?
Hi, thanks. Yeah, so again, my name is Kevin Lynn. I'm the program manager for systems integration and the DOE SunShot Initiative. And I'd like to thank everybody for attending the webinar overview of the DOE CPUC High Penetration Solar Forum. So everyone should be aware that in addition to myself, Ann Peterson from ITRON is also on the phone representing CPUC. She will not be speaking, but she will be taking questions during the question and answer portion of this the webinar. So today's point of today's webinar is really to discuss the intent of the workshop, to go over some of the California utility perspective that they presented at this particular workshop, to address some of the challenges that both we and the California Public Utilities Commission see to address grid integration, and to talk about a few of the key awards that we are looking at as part of this workshop. So basically, you see on this first slide, I believe back in December of 2010, really when I was first getting started, I traveled out to California and met with the CPUC team. And at the time, that was Molly Sterkel and Ann Peterson and Smita Gupta. And we both realized that both of us had portfolios of research projects that were trying to address the issue of the challenges presented by grid integration, trying to install high penetrations of solar on the utility grid. So it became pretty obvious up front that if we could work together holistically and get results from, be able to present, not only present all the materials to everyone together, to not only to do that as well as get information on feedback from the different utilities and stakeholders in the groups together, and to plan holistically potentially moving forward, that would be advantageous for us. So back in March 1st and 2nd of 2011, we held our first workshop where many of our awards were just getting started. On February 13th and 14th of 2013, we had another workshop 2 years later where we could really present more of the awards, the results of the awards that we've both been funding over the last 2 years. This time, Molly Sterkel had moved on, so Melissa Charles was there representing the California Public Utilities Commission. So this is the meeting agenda that we held. One of the other things I probably should recognize is one of our awardees to our good luck is the University of California, San Diego. And Byron Washam, who was the representative from that on one of our awards there, was nice enough to let us use their script facility in San Diego, which was really a beautiful facility. So we ended up, as you can see from the agenda, both Melissa Charles and myself gave some introductory, just very brief introductory talks. But a key piece was that 9:30 to 10:30 portion where we had representatives from the California Independent System Operator and three utilities give us their perspectives on what some of these issues were, just to set up the rest of the day. And then the rest of the both day one and day two were really focused on presenting the results of the work that we've done in our awards. And then Thursday we talked about what are some of the gaps that we still need to address, both from the California and from the DOE perspective. Next slide. So just to go through some of the California Solar Initiative's RD&D program, I think one of the key pieces is to show that, back in 2006, they allocated $50 million worth of research, $50 million for research, development, and demonstration and deployment projects, with quite a large portion of that targeting grid integration, which I thought was, obviously very prescient to be able to realize that was going to be such a big issue moving forward. Next slide. So some of the research that CPUC has focused on has been on solar resource models, addressing impacts of high penetration PV, identifying high value locations for PV, utility models and visualization tools for high penetration PV, integrating solar resource models into grid operation models and planning tools, and utility interconnection. And as you can see, to date, over $16 million has been allocated to research on grid integration within the state of California. Next slide. So this is a list of the projects that they currently are overseeing within their portfolio. And there is some overlap in some of the work that we do. For example, we both fund the Southern California Edison to look at they're enabling high penetration of PV to be put on their particular distribution feeders. And we also both fund University of California, San Diego, just to name two. But it's all, you know, by working together, we can make sure that we can not have overlap, but we can actually complement each other with the funding we have, which I think is really something that we both have tried to and are interested in focusing on. I won't try to necessarily go through, you know, obviously all the different projects here. At the end of this presentation, we have links to the presentations given by all of the awardees for all these different presentations. So that will be a great resource for you if you're interested in what all these different awardees are doing. Next slide. Similarly, this is another list. These are the awards that we presented. Most of the top six that are called the high penetration solar deployment project, these have been implemented for several years. And so there was quite a bit more information on those particular projects and what they've done in the last few years. We also, the bottom four, plug and play and solar forecasting, were pretty much introduced at the beginning of this calendar year. So we were just getting these started. Plug and play is focused mostly on can we develop a PV system that can be plugged into your home, similar to a television set where there's no major interconnection required. I mean, there's same day interconnection and same day permitting, and being able to install, even being able to pick up a PV system, say from a Home Depot, be able to install it on your house that day and go through all the interconnection and permitting requirements that day. And similarly with solar forecasting as a brand new award, which I'll be talking about a little later on today. Next slide. So, this is just, and starting with the California overview, Jim Blashford from the CalISO presented a great presentation. Again, all those presentations are on our website, which we'll link to at the end. But a few key slides that he presented. You can see, the current capacity of power within CalISO, close to 60 gigawatts, with quite high penetrations of wind and solar currently on their system, and a very 30 million people served with 309 million megawatt hours of electricity delivered annually. So a huge market for them. Next slide. So this is. One of their larger concerns, as you can see, these are some typical March days and projected days, both for 2012 moving in projections into 2020. So their concern here is as solar penetrations get higher and higher, the capacity value, it's going to start displacing the energy. There's going to be a lot more energy being generated in the middle of the day. And that's going to decrease the capacity value of solar as higher and higher penetrations occur. In addition, that also potentially could increase the ramps. So you could potentially have a very large ramp in the morning when solar is producing a lot. And then, when all that solar goes off, then you'll have to have all sorts of ancillary services or generation come back on. To deal with that afternoon ramp. And this is going to be shown a lot more clearly in the next slide. So moving through so you can see in the morning where you could potentially have a high ramp up of 8 gigawatts across CalISO in 2 hours. then with PV coming online, they'll have to push off, you know, turn off a lot of the dispatchable power in the morning and afternoon period. And then when all the solar goes off, you will have to be able to turn a lot of the dispatchable generation back on to make sure that they can handle the ramp that comes from when all that solar goes offline. So these are, you know, from the CAISO perspective, are really big problems that they foresee as more and more solar comes online. Next slide. So another big problem that or issue or challenge that they foresee as well is not only with a lot you're installing quite a bit of solar, but a lot of that solar is going to be distributed generation, and that comes with Governor Brown's initiative to install 12 gigawatts of distributed generation, I believe, by the end of the decade. So the issue with that is they're not necessarily going to be able to see that generation as it's, whether it's on or off, and so it becomes harder for them to plan for the next day how much generation is going to be on site, and then to do operations on that same day. If there's no visibility on 12 gigawatts of distributed solar or distributed generation in general, it's very difficult for them to do the planning and operation. So part of, you know, one of their great concerns that both the CPUC and DOE is trying to address is the issue of solar forecasting. To be able to understand, looking at the weather and understanding how much distributed generation is out there on the site, and be able to potentially forecast day ahead what that generation should be, and also, you know, on the 15th, in the same day, maybe 15 minutes ahead or hour ahead or several hours ahead, to be able to, you know, understand when some of these ramps occur so they can properly plan out the amount of ancillary services that they need to handle some of the ramps that could occur both in the morning and the afternoon as penetrations of PV get higher and higher. So that was one of the main messages I think we've heard from, both of us have heard from the California ISO. Next slide. So these are some slides from Tom Bialik from San Diego Gas and Electric. And so after looking at it from the ISO perspective, Tom provided some great slides on from the distributed generation perspective. So as you can see, you know, the number of circuits that they're looking at with penetrations of solar starting from 2010 going into 2016, see, you know, the number of how the as time goes on, the penetrations of solar on these particular feeders go up and up. So back in 2016, you could potentially have about 100 feeders looking at, you know, 30% or more, penetration of 30% or more solar on those particular feeders. This, you know, the results of this is going to require more interconnection studies to make sure that the impacts of those that solar is going to be, you know, negligible or not, or they can take it into account as they do their planning for distribution. And some of the awards, I mean, one of the awards that I'll talk about will also address this issue of interconnection and studies as we move forward. Next slide. So one of the, you know, as many of you who may be on the phone are aware, one of the primary issues that utilities are concerned about is how the voltage may or may go outside of the nominal voltage range defined by ANSI on the distribution system. So this is kind of a complicated graph, but if you look at the top blue line and the red dotted line, looking at the nominal voltage should be, and you can see as if you put PV on this particular system, you can see how the voltage of the line, which is represented by the solid blue line above, goes above that upper ANSI range several times during in this time period from 936 to 155. And if you look at that narrow band that has a black box around it from about 1020 to 1030, you can see how it stays pretty constantly above that particular voltage. So this is an example of how PV can potentially raise the voltage above the upper ANSI range. And this is something that we certainly want to address as part of our research, how to make sure that as more and more PV comes on the system, that we don't go outside the voltage range designed for the distribution system. Next slide. So some of the particular, one of the things that came out from this was, you know, they have a very great focus, and I think a lot of the state of California does as well, is having specific inverter characteristics that can provide real and reactive power support and dynamic VAR injection and communication capability, so they can be controlled to make sure that they can control that voltage, whether it starts going in outside that ANSI range. So, you know, one of the things that they told me that they've been interested in trying to do is, you know, currently the interconnection standard, IEEE 1547, doesn't allow, you know, any kind of control, reactive power control on these distributed generators. And we're in the process of right now of seeing if we can change some of those standards. But California is also looking at trying to change those standards within the state because their need is much greater, seeing as how the penetrations of solar they have today. So they focused on this particular one piece that was really needed. And, you know, thankfully, one of our solicitations in the past has been solar energy grid integration systems, where we've helped fund the development of such inverters over the last 3, 4, or 5 years. Next slide. So that, you know, gives just sort of a brief. There are several other presentations from California presenting their views. I think those two give sort of a brief picture of some of the issues that they're really looking at. Now I wanted to go through, you know, some of the issues that we see and what we hear from the utilities, as well as some of the key technical challenges, that we need to help address as we get to higher and higher penetrations of PV. So, you know, one is voltage. We saw some examples from Tom Bialik of when issues where you can put PV on the distribution system, and that causes voltage deviations above and beyond how the distribution system is designed. Another issue that I'll go through is protection. So, circuit breakers and fuses that are installed throughout the distribution feeder to make sure that too much current doesn't flow through and cause the wires to burn and fail. So how does putting all these distributed generators, which affect that protection and the coordination of that protection on the distribution system? So I have a few slides to describe that. Unintentional islanding is another issue. Making sure that the PV systems that are on the distribution system go offline when the utility goes offline. Actually, and that's been something that we've worked on for a long time. Things are actually changing now where they actually potentially want the inverters to stay online longer in certain circumstances, so they don't necessarily make a reliability problem potentially worse by going offline when either the frequency is, you know, when the grid itself is in trouble. So there's some changes looking at this particular problem right now. So those are more of some of the technical issues. You know, in terms of some other things that we're trying to look at as well, is modifying existing distribution tools. You know, many of the tools are not designed to look at things like PV systems and the variability of PV systems and how that affects the distribution feeder. We're trying to work with companies like Distributed Energy Workstation from EDD and working closely with EPRI on trying to help develop and work on developing some of these tools. Visibility and control, you know, this is another issue where we've worked with both SMUD and Arizona Public Service to try to use visualization techniques to understand the impacts of solar from a visualization standpoint, and then to be able, from that visualization, try to control those systems appropriately. And then lastly, you know, interconnection. This is a crucial area. You know, California has large interconnection queues. Is there anything that we can do to either improve or work to improve the existing interconnection screening process? And also to, when studies are required, how can we accelerate or help develop faster mechanisms to do interconnection studies moving forward? Next slide. So this is, you know, a very brief, for those of you who are not familiar, voltage regulation issue. You know, this is a slide. Basically, if you're looking at this, we've got, you know, an example of a substation with utility lines going to homes without PV, you know, above, which is the red line, and then PV system, a feeder, a similar feeder with PV. So if you look at the bottom of this particular slide, you can see, you know, a typical way a feeder would be, you have the basically you have generation coming from the substation, and as that energy flows through those conductors to all the different homes, the wire provides a little bit of resistance to that electricity, and that causes the voltage to go down all the way toward the end of the feeder. So that's a very typical, and all these distribution feeders are designed that way. So they'll start high, and by the time they get to the end of the feeder, they get a little bit lower, depending on the resistance of the conductor. So as you add photovoltaics to it, you may actually, in just a little bit of photovoltaics, which is that top graph, you'll look at and see that maybe the voltage won't go down quite so much, and that's because you're basically taking away some of the current that's required from the utility. So less current's flowing from the utility, and that car, you know, so there's less voltage drop coming from down through those conductors. Now, potentially at a higher penetration, you could potentially force not only consume a little bit of the electricity on the distribution system, but you could potentially consume so much electricity from the loads that are on that distribution feeder that you start pushing electricity backwards through the system, causing reverse power flow, and this could actually push the voltage up higher than it was designed for. And you can see in that with very high penetration, you could potentially push the voltage above its ANSI limit. And I think we saw that from the graph from San Diego Gas and Electric. So this is an issue that we want to try to deal with. Next slide. You know, I think this is a similar graph where you can potentially have similar problems. I think the main point that I'd want you to take away from this is, you know, it's very important not only for us to be able to control the voltage from the PV systems, but also to coordinate the voltage coordinate with other voltage control equipment like capacitor banks and low drop compensators to be able to make sure that all that those systems are coordinated together. And if we can design systems using some new modeling techniques, so we can ensure that the voltage, we can use all this equipment together holistically to make sure that we keep the voltage within the proper range. And I think that's probably one of the things that we're trying to address both through our HiPen projects and through our CJSAC project. Next slide. So this is, I didn't go through this too much before, but this is a similar kind of issue where in the past, when there's been small amounts of PV penetration on distribution feeders, you know, most of the utilities, just if there's a problem with the utilities just want all those distributed generators like solar just to go offline and stay offline. And that's the way that the IEEE 1547 interconnection standard was originally designed back in 2003. Now, as more and more solar comes online, having all of that solar, if it's providing a significant portion of the load, becomes problematic. And so they're looking at new ways through what they call low voltage ride through in this particular graph that's shown at the bottom of the slide. You know, it says, hey, under certain situations, we probably want to stay connected if the voltage gets low, and then potentially give the utility some discretion if it gets down to another particular range. And then, you know, once it reaches a particular voltage range where it's low and it's been low for a while, we should just go ahead and step off the system because the problem is more extensive. So this is, you know, as PV penetrations rise, the general, you know, piece from this slide is we need to develop inverters and standards around those inverters that help support the grid and not necessarily just jump off the grid when there's an issue. Next slide. So quickly with protection coordination, this particular slide demonstrates, you know, if there is a fault, you know, if one current carrying conductor comes into contact with another that it's not supposed to, and you have a huge amount of load, this can require some of the circuit breakers to basically stop current flowing through those wires. And that keeps them from basically getting too hot or even catching on fire. So one of the things that, you know, and typically since generation has always in the past come from these large utility generators on the other side of the substation, all the production coordination, all the protection equipment, circuit breakers, fuses, et cetera, is designed in thinking that all that current is going to be coming from one particular direction. But now in this case, you could potentially have a large number of other generators that are on the distribution system also supplying current to those particular feeders and going in a direction that's opposite from what's expected and can potentially cause other circuit breakers to trip in a way that wasn't originally expected. So this is just one example of how utilities and others need to think about how to properly protect wires through circuits and fuses and circuit breakers to make sure that there aren't unintended consequences from putting PV systems on these feeders. Next slide. This is a similar type of system example as well. Basically, potentially with the number of distributed generators, you could unintentionally cause a fuse to trip when it wasn't necessary for it to trip, and this would cause utilities to have to come out and replace that particular fuse if it wasn't designed appropriately. So, next slide. So I covered this a little bit already, but basically unintentional islanding is a concern where potentially if you have enough PV or other distributed generators and load together in one place and the utility goes down, you could potentially still supply all that load with those generators and keep all those lines live without the utility being aware of it. So that's the concern there, and we're trying to, currently, you know, inverters have anti-islanding software to monitor the grid. There is some concern that if you have more, you know, at very high penetrations, maybe that anti-islanding software won't work as well. So we're trying to address that as an issue as well. Next slide. I think, you know, one of the issues with distribution modeling that's been key is most of the models that have run are looking, you know, basically at one or two points, static points, where they're looking at the worst case scenarios and, you know, basically designing the distribution feeder around those particular points. The problem with that now, with putting PV in that scenario, is that PV can potentially is a variable resource that comes and goes with the sun, and it may be more necessary now to look at what we call a quasi-static time series simulation, or time series simulation where you're looking at, you know, inputs every 15 minutes or every minute or every whatever time step that you feel is appropriate over the year to determine how best to design one of these feeders with PV on it. And so we're basically working with different companies and working with EPRI, as I mentioned before, to try to understand how we can use these quasi-static time series analysis to help design distribution feeders better so they can handle, we can have a better understanding of the effects and impacts of PV on the distribution feeder. Next slide. So this is, you know, when we were talking about interconnection studies before, this was a paper that we wrote just looking at updating the existing interconnection screens as they exist. You know, California has been leading the way in some of these new interconnection screens, and we were trying to look at, you know, based on some of the results of our project, to see if we can inform a new way to, or taking another look at interconnection screens to make sure that sciences and engineering, latest engineering findings were informing the way the interconnection screens are done today. Next slide. So after, you know, there was quite, as you saw earlier in the presentation, we had somewhere on the order of 15 or so different projects that we presented their findings during the DOE CPUC forum. And I wanted just to go through one or two of them as part of this webinar to address, to show some of the things that not only some of the impacts, but how both DOE and CPUC are working together. So one of those projects, the California Public Utility Commission is funding EPRI, Electric Power Research Institute, to look at new interconnection screening methods. And two of EPRI's partners in this process are both the National Renewable Energy Laboratory and Sandia National Laboratories, which the DOE is funding to help solve, help look at this particular problem. So, you know, one of the issues as the price of solar comes down so dramatically, you know, we're looking at more and more interconnection requests. Utilities are seeing more and more interconnection requests. And in addition, they're seeing more and more complicated interconnection potentials because the penetration of PV is going well above this rule of thumb, the 15% rule. So, which is part of the paper interconnection screen, which is requiring many of these newer PV installations to have to do studies, which can, in some cases, take several months and can cost, you know, some money in order to get them accomplished. So, you know, both CPUC and DOE see a, you know, see a need potentially to how can we potentially do these some of these studies or some a study faster that can potentially screen and take away the need for doing a full study on a particular feeder. So again, this is where we're looking at. They're looking to EPRI, again, working with NREL and Sandia, with several utility partners in California, San Diego Gas and Electric, Southern California Edison, Pacific Gas and Electric, and SMUD, Sacramento Municipal Utility District, to basically look and say, can we categorize the 5,000 or so feeders or thousands of feeders that are in California into some 20 or so categories, and then understand those 20 particular classifications very well, and then apply the results, potentially apply the results of understanding these 20 representative feeders very well to the other feeders that exist in the system to potentially speed up the interconnection study process. Next slide. So, you know, one of the first things that they were doing as part of this particular project was looking at all the existing interconnection screening rules, whether it be Rule 21 or the WDAT or the Small Generation Interconnection Protocol from FERC, as well as European and other interconnection processes as well. Next slide. So in the second task, as I mentioned before, they're looking at trying to identify different classifications of feeders, develop a database of existing feeder characteristics for statistical processing, and try to identify a specific number of those feeders, say 20 feeders, representative of a range of distribution feeder types across the grid within California. Next slide. This is just an example of a sort of a binning process that they've been looking at based on, I believe, 12 different parameters that they were looking at. If they're close in terms of these 12 parameters, you could bend them into a particular category or classification of feeders, looking at, again, 20 representing potentially thousands of feeders that exist within California. Next slide. So once you have those particular feeders, you can install a lot. You know, EPRI has some excellent monitoring, pole-mounted monitoring equipment that can look at voltage and sunlight and various other parameters on a second-by-second basis, and obtain some very high-quality data on these particular representative feeders that we've identified to really understand those particular systems very well. And then use that information again to understand how the impacts of solar on other feeders might be. Next slide. So this is example of just the distribution monitoring system and some of the locations of where they've in previous feeders where you may put one of the, some of these monitoring systems. So if you look on the right hand side, there's a picture of their I guess this is the distributed PV monitoring system, where you have the one PV module and the monitoring equipment basically behind it. And then if you look at the circuit area picture next to that, where just a representation on particular feeders and where you might install these particular monitoring equipment along the particular feeder. So this is a really good way of monitoring, you know, the impacts of PV on the distribution system using this monitoring equipment, looking at both, you know, a variety of parameters on the distribution system and also understanding the output of what the PV system would be as well. Next slide. So then with this task, they can use an analysis to look at, once you understand what the impacts are, you can model the impact of putting PV, different sizes of PV systems along all different locations along the feeder and identify where potential problems can occur. So, next slide. Yeah, so if you're looking at a particular PV analysis, one with no penetration, a little bit of PV penetration, and then more PV penetration and beyond. So basically, you can look at these 20 feeders, monitor it, put, you know, model all sorts of different penetrations of PV using their OpenDSS software, and then identify locations where, you know, hey, once you reach this particular PV penetration, you're going to start having issues in particular areas. And use that information again to inform what might happen on similar feeders that are within the state of California. So we're very excited about this project. I think we're looking to not only, you know, I think we've come up with some great parameters and are interested in seeing how this particular method works and potentially improving it as, you know, over the next couple of years. Next slide. So similarly, we have another project that we've worked with EPRI, and I wanted to show, this is one with one of our high penetration solar deployment projects with Virginia Tech as well. And I wanted to show this, I think, just to demonstrate some of the importance of using some of the high penetration technology or some of the inverter technologies that we've developed through CGIS. So, and this applies also to the last project that you saw. So if you move, next slide. So this particular one was particular was looking at a hosting capacity comparison for or hosting capacity being how much PV can you put on a particular distribution feeder without causing issues. The particular result of this feeder was, you know, even though many screens demonstrate that, you know, hey, if there's one feeder, you know, the results of one feeder are the same for any feeder. You can see in this particular chart, if you look at feeder A and feeder B and the voltage impacts, you know, basically feeder A, which has many of the similar characteristics of feeder B, however, the amount of solar that you can put on this particular feeder without having voltage issues in feeder A is much greater than feeder B. And I think that's been one of the issues that we've wanted to address, where, you know, the screening process is very useful, but it's also being able to do some actual studies and do them quickly can address some of the concerns that utilities have for different kinds of feeders that they have on their system. Next slide. Yeah, if we could just go through all of this. Great. So this is just showing similarly those two different feeders from before. Basically what they've shown here, and this is kind of difficult to describe, but I'll do my best. If you look on the x-axis, you have the increasing penetration, so that's how much PV has been installed on that particular distribution feeder. And if you look on the y-axis, you're looking at the voltage impact as a result of putting that amount of PV. all the different points on this particular graph represent all the different configurations of being able to put PV on that distribution feeder in different size shapes and sizes. And basically what this is telling you in this graph is in the green area in the chart or graph on the left-hand side, you can put up to 500 kilowatts on this PV system without any issue in any configuration that you want, and you will not have a voltage issue. In the second chart, you're basically saying you could potentially put up to over 1,000 kilowatts of PV on this particular system, but where you put that PV is going to make a difference in terms of whether or not you're going to have a voltage issue. And then once you get beyond that, you know, basically any PV in addition that you put on that's going to create an issue. Whereas in feeder A, you can look at the penetration levels there, and you're basically having no voltage issue in any place that you put it on that particular system. Next slide. So this is just basically a really nice slide showing how if you use, and this is why San Diego Gas and Electric was interested in using some volt VAR control in their inverters. Basically, we're looking at on the left-hand side, the same feeder we looked in the last slide. Basically, what's the penetration level that you can attain without any kind of voltage control? And then if you have inverters, however, that do have volt VAR control or are able to control the voltage on their voltage output of their system, you can potentially install well above 500 kilowatts you see in the left-hand graph, up to almost a megawatt in any configuration without any issue at all. And then you could, even beyond that, depending on the configuration, you can get well beyond two megawatts. So basically the takeaway from this graph is, if you do have an inverter with reactive power control that can control the voltage output of their system with communications, you can potentially, vastly increase what we call the hosting capacity or the amount of solar that can be put on a distribution feeder quite a bit. So that's why we're very excited about using this particular technology. Next slide. So I've gone my 45 minutes or my 40 minutes. There's a lot of other really good information you can get either from the Solar High Pen or High Pen Solar Penetration website, which I linked there, the first link. You can also get all those presentations from the CSI website as well, both sites have great information. I encourage you to go look at both sites to get great information, because there's a whole lot more information that we shared over those 2 days. And
great. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Anne. We would like to thank our speakers today, Kevin Lin and Anne Peterson, for their time today. And we will be posting the presentation slides, audio and transcript, within the next few days on the High Pen Portal Past Workshops page and the SunShot Past Meetings and Workshops page. I will be sending out an email with the link to everybody that has participated. So this concludes today's webinar. Thank you for attending, and goodbye.